tonight I figure we'll talk about a topic from Baba Basra, a Cheska Chabatim topic, and that is the topic of Lashon Hara Ba'apei Tlasa, or Lashon Hara as it relates to matters that are presumably of public knowledge, which is a very complex sugya that comes out of very little in the Gemara. And it's leaves a lot to be determined. Now, on the surface, it sounds like the Gemara is telling us in two places, in Maseches Baba Basra and Cheskas Abatim on Lamates, and in Maseches Erechin on Daf Tes Zayin, that something that is public knowledge is not subject to the laws of Lashon Hara. Or as the Gemara puts it, Kol Milsa Dis Amra Ape Tlasa Les Buhu Mishum Lishna Bisha. Literally, anything that is said in front of three is not a problem as far as Lashon Hara is concerned. So the idea of being said in front of three is a clue to the notion that the matter is public knowledge, based on the idea that chavrach chavre islay, the chavrach the chavre chavre islay, that your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a cousin who has an uncle, who has a hairdresser, who has a neighbor, who has a dog walker, that essentially, if you tell three people, so the whole world already knows. And in Maseches Erechin, when this comes up, it comes up in the context of a lot of Gemaras dealing specifically with Lashon Hara. Most of the Lashon Hara sugyas are in a daf and a half in the middle of Erechin. In Baba Basra, it comes up in a context, and it's not clear from the context, it's subject a little bit to a discussion among the Rishonim, it's not clear from the context whether Baba Basra is talking about Lashon Hara, or whether it's not talking about Lashon Hara at all, and it's only borrowing this concept in order to tell us how things become public knowledge. Because the context in the Gemara in Baba Basra, Cheskas Abatim, as Yeshiva is learning this year, people are familiar, Cheskas Abatim, a lot of it deals with the idea that somebody is living on a property, and somebody else claims that he is the owner of that property. The original owner claims that he is still the owner of that property, and that the person who's living there right now is living there illegitimately. So the Gemara assumes that if a person wants to assert his claim that somebody is living in his property illegitimately, so he has to be mocha, he has to protest. So in that context, the Gemara discusses what if the person is somewhere else. The person is at some distance from the house that he is trying to hold on to, and he wants to assert his rights from a distance. So it emerges from the Gemara that he can do that, that he doesn't have to actually be there in person. We recommend that he does come in person, but even if he can't, he's still able to be mocha from a distance. So in that context, so the Gemara raises the question, so what does he have to do to make sure that the person living in the house, the machzik, will know that he's upset, will know that he is claiming that he still owns it, which is a crucial part of the process. Because if the inhabitant, if the machzik, doesn't know that the original owner is complaining, so then he could throw away his shtar after 3 years, and he could then claim that it's not his fault, he wasn't expected to hold on to the shtar. So therefore, it's important that the machzik find out what's going on. So a crucial part of the process is that the marakama, the original owner, has to be mocha in a way that the machzik finds out. So in that context, the Gemara brings up this point that anything that's said in front of three people is not lishna bisha, is not lashon hara. Now again, it's not clear how much of that statement is important for Baba Basra. It could be that the Gemara is saying that because essentially this is Lashon Hara. Because what are you saying? If you're saying somebody's living in your property, so essentially you're calling them a thief. So maybe there's some concern of Lashon Hara here. It could be justified. It could be okay for any number of reasons. But maybe that's why the Gemara is bringing it up, because there's a concern of Lashon Hara. And the Gemara is therefore saying, no, it's okay because of the Ape Tlasa factor. Or it could be that our Gemara is not talking about Lashon Hara itself. That's not the issue. The Gemara is talking about something unrelated to Lashon Hara. But it quotes the halach about Lashon Hara because it shows you that three people make something public knowledge. And since it's crucial that the information get back to the machzik, So we need to borrow that concept of apeit lasa of three people in order to make sure the message gets across. Okay, so far so good? All right, so that ambiguity is a little bit in the background here. That ambiguity about whether Lashon Hara is the subject, whether that's a Bava Basra topic over there, that's part of the issue in figuring out what apeit lasa means. Yes, sir.
Assuming that it is Lashon Hara, that would mean it would be usher to tell people less than three, like if you want to just tell.
Possibly, and you'll see why that makes sense based on some of the. Now, clearly that sounds counterintuitive, and we'll see why it makes sense. So, essentially, what does this mysterious sentence mean? Right? It sounds like the easiest interpretation is that it means that something that's public knowledge, you're allowed to talk about. But before we get too excited, so there are a number of limitations on this principle, and it has to do a little bit with the fact that we're really not sure what this Gemara means. The Gemara is subject to so many different interpretations that it leaves us having to be very careful as far as how it's employed. Yes?
If we have the Gemara in Erechon, which says this, then like, why are we concerned about in what context the Gemara of Asher?
It's not clear what either Gemara is saying, as we'll see. Yeah. But part of the ambiguity is that also Bava Basra, the way it brings it up, leaves it open to a couple of interpretations which add to the mix. So essentially, there are at least four paths you could take in understanding this Gemara. And normally, when you have Machlokas Rishonim, if you have two opinions, certainly three or four, so you assume that at least some of them are mutually exclusive. That we don't have to assume they're all true. In this case, it's almost possible that they're all true. It's almost possible that each of the four opinions is saying something about the mechanics and the dynamics of Lashon Hara, and that each of them impacts on our practice in some way. So after we go through them, we'll look at how they impact our halacha, or at least theoretically impact the halacha, and it could be that the facts that each one of the Rishonim is laying down could all impact how we practice things. So again, on the surface, what it sounds like it means is that something that's public knowledge is basically fair game. So that seems to be, for example, the way the Rashbam understands it. The Rashbam in Bava Basra understands it that way, that a milsa shel gnai, something that is disgraceful, something that is offensive, I'm trying to find a better way to say it, that it has been said in front of three people, so it's mutter to repeat that, because the assumption is that it's already well known. Now that position leaves open a number of questions. On the one hand, it's the most intuitive interpretation. It's probably, if you don't know anything else about the sugya, probably the first thing you'd guess is that's what it means. But there are a number of loose ends that you have to figure out. First of all, it sounds like we're assuming that the information was probably conveyed be'isr. That there's nothing here that explains how the information got out to three people to begin with. It's very likely that the original speaker presumably did something wrong. He said something he shouldn't have said, but the fact is it was said in front of three people, and now it's public knowledge. So this first interpretation, and we'll see this is something that may shift from interpretation to interpretation, this first pshat is assuming that the heter, whatever it is, the heter of apeit lasa, is talking to the listeners. Right? We don't know what the speaker's heter was or if he had one, but the listeners, the ones who heard it in the context of three people, are allowed to repeat it to someone else. That's I think actually that's going to be your first.
This might be what you're suggesting, but we mentioned the question previously about the nature of Lashon Hara, whether it's been in the first.
So we're going to get to that, yeah. So this will, I think we'll get to what you're talking about. It's a part of the discussion. Yeah.
So the speaker is going to violate an Isser of Lashon Hara, and the speaker and the listeners are allowed to listen to it, even though it's Lashon Hara?
So that's another question, right? So that seems to suggest that there's an Avera happening there, too. Now, there's a lot to figure out about what's the Isser of listening to Lashon Hara. Is it an Isser of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara? Does that mean you can't listen? Probably, but not necessarily. There's a lot of ways you can interpret that. You know, you could interpret the sugya to fit with that. You could interpret it that they heard it before they had a chance to stop it. They weren't necessarily makabel. There may be any one of the number of exceptions why they were allowed to be makabel, or any other.
They're passing
possible.
It on. I assume they were makabel.
Unless they're passing it on as a suffix, you know, passing it on exactly as they heard it. So it's one of the open issues in that interpretation, but it's not necessarily a fatal one. So one of the issues is that we have to assume, or it's likely that the first speaker did this best, so that's one problem. So it's a little funny that basically you could do some Avera, and in doing that Avera, so now you make a situation where it's not an Avera anymore, which is a little bit of a quirk, if that's the case. But that seems to be what the Rashbam is saying. Now, you could ask a number of questions. So even if it is public knowledge, so first of all, is it public knowledge automatically? It's presumably it takes time for it to become public knowledge. So why should I be allowed to share something because it will become public if it's not public yet? And there's no indication in the sources that there's some type of time period you have to wait. Says the Chafetz Chaim asks in one place, you know, let's say, you know, spell it out exactly like this, but let's say you have somebody who's very careless with his property. And he's so careless with his property that it's a given that it will get stolen someday. So would you say, Hayitachin, there's a heter to steal it? Because since it's going to get stolen anyway, so you're allowed to steal it. So why should it be true here, asks the Chafetz Chaim, that just because it's going to come out, so it's okay for you to be the one saying it? So that's another difficulty that we have to figure out. Another difficulty that we'll come back to is that Ape Tzlas is presumably not a absolute. As the post can point out, there's no Gzer Sakasiv here. The Gemara doesn't quote any Pasuk at all, even as an Asmachta. It's not like this is some cut in stone you sowed. Literally, it's not cut in the Luchos, it's not cut in stone, that there is an exemption for three people. So even if three people is the presumption that it's public knowledge, what about any type of variable you could introduce where it won't necessarily spread, or it won't spread beyond a certain point? So that's something we also have to figure out. In addition, so let's say it's already out there. So are we saying, Hayitachin, that just because people know about it, so it's right for me to talk about it? So that's what I think you were trying to suggest, that this goes a little bit to a question of how we understand Lashon Hara as a whole, and it's a topic we talked about in the past without focusing on this particular aspect. That do we assume that Lashon Hara is an issue of midos? Right? That Lashon Hara is a character trait? That it's wrong to indulge in gossip about people? And that's a character problem in general? Or do we view Lashon Hara as essentially an issue of hezek? That we recognize that people can suffer because of what you say about them? And that maybe that's why we have a prohibition of Lashon Hara, you can't get people in trouble by talking about them. In which case, the heter of Ape Tzlasa is more easily understood. Because if it's already known, so then you're not causing them any problems. And you could even make the case that even if it's not known yet, but it will become known, so if the geder hadin is that you're causing them issues, and the issue is inevitable, even without you, so then you could argue that it's not even in that category at all. So if we understand Lashon Hara strictly speaking as a hezek, so then this position is understandable. But if we believe there's a midos issue as well, which is likely the case, so then it's hard to imagine that this should really be mutter, certainly if it's an actual milsoshal gnai, like the Rashbam phrases it. Hi.
Maybe I'll say that it's only a bad character trait if you're saying it in a situation where, like, you're going to be informing people and, like, you're going to be spreading all this bad news. But, like, within Ape Tzlasa, if it's already known, then it wouldn't be considered a bad character trait.
So it depends on what kind of situation is involved.
Right.
Right. So that brings us to the Rambam. So the Rambam, on the one hand, the Rambam's formulation could most likely, you haven't seen the other three shitas yet, but if you were to hear all four shitas, so you'd probably agree that the Rambam's position most neatly fits with the Rashbam that we just said. But he does change it a little bit, which may account for the issue that we're talking about now. But the Rambam in Hilchos Deis, in Perek Hei, Halacha Hei, so the Rambam says that if something was said in front of three people, so then the people who heard it are allowed to talk about it. But he makes a condition. So far it sounds like the Rashbam, right? But then he makes a condition that v'hu sheyiskaven lo lahavir esakol, you have to have the intent not to try to spread it further, for the glosso yoser, not to reveal it more. And the Kesef Mishnah comments that what he's saying is that if it comes up in conversation and you're talking about it, you're allowed to talk about it, but you can't have intent, davka, to disseminate the information.
With others, or only talking about it amongst themselves?
So it sounds like he's saying talking about it to people who already know, or even to others, but when you're talking about it, you're not intending to inform them of this fact, but rather you're discussing it and it's going to come, or discussing something related and it's going to come out, so you're allowed to discuss it, even though it will come out that this is the case. So there is a whole discussion, where does he get this condition of not spreading it further? So there are a couple of ways to understand it. It could be that he understands it basically that, again, this is a logic-based concept. There's no mukkar for it in Chumash. So presumably it's based on the reality of people knowing. So what the Rambam is saying is that when that's the reality that people know, so then you can talk about it with those people. To expand the circle is not mutter. But there could be another aspect as well. And a number of achronim are medayik. I believe the Avodas Melech has this point, but I saw also the Shuvas Az Nidbaru with the Nami Yoshua Zilber and his Shuvas. The Shoel makes this suggestion, and he agrees, and agrees more, that there's an interesting diuk one can make in the Rambam. That the Rambam over there in Hilchos Deis, when he lays out the whole principle of Lashon Hara, but the Rambam is very important in the history of Hilchos Lashon Hara, because he, together with Rabbeinu Yonah, so he, among the Rishonim, really laid out the principles. So the Sefer Chavetz Chaim, a lot of it is based on the Rambam and Rabbeinu Yonah. Other Rishonim you have to pull from here and there. You don't really have a Masechta, and the Shulchan Aruch doesn't codify it, which is a whole discussion. Why the Shulchan Aruch doesn't codify it? But so as a systematic halacha before the Chavetz Chaim, you really have the Rambam and Rabbeinu Yonah. So the Rambam in six or seven halachas, he basically lays out all the rules of Lashon Hara. So in the beginning, in halacha beis, he talks about what rechilus is, and then he talks about what Lashon Hara is. It says Lashon Hara is you're trying to be meganah somebody. You're trying to speak negatively about people. And then in halacha hey, he all of a sudden starts over again. And he says, what's Lashon Hara? Says, if you're going to say something which, if it became known, would cause somebody harm, says, bein begufo, bein mamono, it will hurt their body, it will hurt their money, or even if it just will annoy them or scare them, he says, all of that is Lashon Hara. But if the matter is already repeated in front of three people, so then you can say it again. So there were a number of later Svarim that wanted to be medayik, that the Rambam is actually delineating two different types of Lashon Hara. And in Halacha Beis, he's basically saying that one type of Lashon Hara is you want to be Megana somebody. You want to knock somebody down. So that is what we would probably associate with our Midos side of the equation. So to be Megana somebody, that's Lashon Hara. And now he lists together with Rechilus and Motzi Shemer. He has a whole progression there. There's actually four things. There's a Rochel, and there's a Lashon Hara, and there's Motzi Shemer. And then there's a Baal Lashon Hara, somebody who is so involved that he reaches a whole new madrega. It's essentially four levels. So that's Halacha Beis. Then in Halacha Hey, he comes back and he starts over again. So he's essentially saying that there's also another category, that if you're going to cause somebody damage, if you're going to hurt somebody, that's also a problem of Lashon Hara. So many have suggested that the way he groups things indicates that the heter of Ape Tlasa only applies to the second type, which he has together in the same halacha and halacha hay over there. So if the issue is just that the information is damaging, so if that information is known, then it's not damaging and you can talk about it. But if you're actually trying to knock the person, so then that's not mutter even Ape Tlasa. And if that's the case, so then we could also understand why he puts that condition there, v'hushlo yiskavin l'haveres akol, that you shouldn't intend to spread it. What he's basically saying is, if that's what you're doing, then they'll bring us back to halacha beis. Saying, in this halacha, I'm just talking about something that doesn't have any negative intent, but could be damaging. So if it could be damaging without negative intent, so then you shouldn't do it anyway, but it's mutter if it's apei tlasa. But if you have negative intent, then we shoot you back to halacha beis. That's lignosis chavero, lignosis chavero. That's wrong. So the Rambam might be distinct from the Rashbam in that way. That maybe the Rashbam is essentially saying if it's public knowledge, you can talk about it. Not convinced that he would say that, because we don't know how much else is in the equation. But the Rambam seems to more clearly say that at least you have to have intent not to take it further. And there are achronim who suggest that he's also saying more than that, that only a certain type of lashon hara is permitted in the apei tlasa. So all of that is as far as the first path. So the first path is that the heter is referring to the listeners, and the listeners can repeat it once they hear it, and the Rambam maybe has conditions. That's it.
The Rambam's not commenting directly, and either the Gemara's. It's just
correct. This is Hilchos Deis. So
it's hard to imagine how he would read the Gemara of Basra like that, because don't we want these people to spread the information?
Right. So that's also a tricky part. That are we essentially saying, as part of the difficulty with this interpretation, so are we essentially saying that, oh, but if they were really from, they wouldn't spread it? And then that gets in the way of what we're trying to do, because we want it spread. So again, he could read the Gemara Baba Basra that way, because, as we mentioned, that's what we had that as an introduction, that it could be the Baba Basra is not concerned about Lashon Hara for other reasons. That we're only borrowing that expression in Baba Basra to have this idea of publicity, and therefore the principle means that normally three people publicize things. If there's an Isser involved, maybe not, but normally three people will publicize things. So we can take that out of Lashon Hara and put it into Baba Basra. So that option still exists in that Gemara. So path two, or path B, is Rashi and Erechin. Rashi and Erechin seems to say things a little differently. And Rashi and Erechin basically says that if a person says something in front of three people, so he's got to be aware that when three people hear something, so it's essentially going to be public knowledge. And therefore, we can assume that he wants it to be public knowledge. And that's why it's mutter to repeat. So once again, this pshat is grouped with the first one because it's also referring to the listeners again, that the listeners who heard something in the presence of three people can repeat it. But the basis is different. It's not because of the fact that it's public, but it's because of the fact that the speaker knows that it's going to be public. Now the problem with that, as the Achronim point out, is that this is only going to work for something that the speaker has rishus to make public. That the presumption has to be that we're dealing with situations which are problematic because the speaker doesn't want them to get out. But if the speaker doesn't have control over this, then it's not going to make a difference. So if the speaker, if it was straight out Lashon Hara, if the speaker got up there and said, Goldberg's a jerk, so who cares what he's thinking? The fact is, it's still a problem to repeat it. This whole approach only works if it's something where it might make a difference. So what kind of thing could make a difference? Well, first of all, maybe it's Tama Gilui Sod issue. Maybe it's Lashon Hara really referring to Gilui Sod, revealing a secret. Then normally, there is a prohibition to reveal secrets, which is also perhaps included in the broad sentence, the broad category of Lashon Hara. So maybe what's going on is that normally the guy was saying something that could have been construed as private. The Gemara Maseches Yuma, Darshaning the Pasuk in the beginning of Vayikra, seems to suggest that really the default is private. If somebody tells you something, you're not supposed to repeat it unless he explicitly tells you it's not private. So maybe that's the understanding here. The person was saying something that seemed like it should be private, but because he was saying it in public, so then that shows you that he doesn't want it to be private, and therefore you're allowed to repeat it. Or, as some Sfarim suggest, maybe it refers to rechilus in one sense of the word. How so? Because rechilus is the way most understand it. Rechilus means that I say to Reuven, I think Shimon's a jerk, and then Reuven goes to Shimon and says, you know, Feldman said you're a jerk. So now Shimon is going to be mad at me. And that's often the intent of the Rochel. That's the way it seems to come across. That the Rochel is trying to start a fight between me and Shimon. And that's what he's doing by passing on what I said about him. So maybe there's a type of rechilus where it does depend on the speaker's wishes. That, let's say I'm saying something that I really want to get the message to him. So then the person in the middle saying it over is not saying it over because he's trying to start a fight. I want to say it to him directly. I can't get it to him any other way. So, for example, in our Bava Basra, that Rashi isn't actually an Erechin, but our Bava Basra works kind of well. That here, I'm telling people this guy's a thief. Why am I saying that? Well, how am I going to feel if somebody goes to him and says, I said he's a thief? Oh, he's trying to start a fight? No, I want him to know I think he's a thief. That's the whole point. So here, maybe that's what's going on. That if I was just whispering to you, you know, that guy, I think he's a thief. So then for you to tell him that I said he's a thief, so that would be rechilus. But here the whole point is I want you to tell him it's rechilus. I don't want you to tell him that you think he's a thief. So then maybe it's not a rechilus issue, because it's not about starting a fight. It's about getting my message that I want to get across. I'm starting a legal fight, but not a fight in the other sense of the word. And therefore, my awareness that it's going to be public is going to be something that will allow it to happen. Now, a key difference between the first pshat and the second pshat, there are a number of differences. So one of the differences, the first pshat could, in theory, be talking about a broader range of things, about actual Lashon Hara, possibly, depending on how you understand it. And here we're only talking about very specific types of things where the speaker has some control over the story. But also, the second pshat is contingent on the speaker being aware that it's public. If you have a scenario where the speaker may not know that there's an Ape Klasa, so then according to the Rashbam, it might be mutter to speak about it, but according to Rashi, it probably wouldn't. Also, what if the speaker says, I know there's 10 people in the room right now, but I'm asking you to keep it private. I'm telling a secret to you 10 people, I don't want you to tell anyone else. So according to Rashi, it for sure would not be mutter to tell anyone else. According to the Rashbam, it might depend. If they were all trustworthy and it's really not going to get out, so then maybe it's takanat apiklasa. But if it's going to get out anyway, so then the fact that I don't want it to get out may not make a difference, because essentially it's already out there and no one's going to harm me any further by talking about it. So maybe according to Rashbam, it would be mutter, and according to Rashi, it probably wouldn't. But on the other side, according to the Rashbam, we have this whole problem about why should be mutter before it gets out. While according to Rashi's pshat, we don't have that problem, because it's all contingent on the fact that he knows it will become public, so it's okay to talk about it, and therefore you don't have to wonder if there should be any time lag. It doesn't matter. As soon as he said it in a public setting, shows he doesn't care, and he could talk about it right away. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so those two of our four pshatim, those first two, assume that we're talking about the listeners. That the listeners have a heter to repeat what they heard. The next two pshatim assume that we're talking to the speaker. That the speaker, who's saying something that would normally be aser, is allowed to say it because there are three people present. Now that, of course, is extremely counterintuitive. Right? Because you would think that if Lashon Hara is prohibited, it is far more prohibited if you say it to a lot of people. Since when does any iser become mutter if you do it to a greater degree? So indeed, that's the way the Chafetz Chaim starts off his section. The Chafetz Chaim in the Klal Beis of Hilchos Lashon Hara. So the Klal Beis is where he talks about Apitlasa the first time. He talks about it a little bit more later as well. But in the beginning of Hilchos Lashon Hara in Klal Beis, he talks about Apitlasa, all the Klal Beis is about this. So he starts off saying, you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara, and you can't say it even to an individual. And certainly not to more people. And the more people you talk to, the worse it is. And you're committing a bigger aver yourself, and you're being machshil, the listener, and as many listeners as you're speaking to. So that's what we would have thought without this gemara, right? That the more people you speak to, the worse it is. So why is it that some rishonim say that we're talking to the speaker here? So one pshat is Tosfos in Bava Basra and Tosfos in Erechin are compatible with each other. They're probably saying the same thing. There's some discussion if they're really saying the same thing, but it certainly seems conceivable that they're saying the same thing. They phrase it differently, but it seems to work. That Tosfos seems to be saying that essentially what we're talking about here is something that's ambiguous, something that can be interpreted a couple of ways. Like the Gemara gives this example, the Gemara in Erechin, in a slightly different context, but possibly in the same context. The Gemara says that an example of Lashon Hara is if you say, there's always a fire burning at that guy's house. Or you're saying, essentially, the oven is always on. The steaks are always coming out of the oven over there. So that is something which can be interpreted two ways. I could be saying that to make the point that he's a glutton, that he's always eating. I'd be unlikely to be meaning it that way. You could be making that point. Or maybe you're trying to say that he's a tremendous machnas orchim, that, oh, he has guests over all the time, and he's constantly cooking and making food for them. Look how wonderful. So that sentence is unclear. The sentence could either be interpreted negatively or positively or anywhere in between. So maybe I shouldn't say something like that, because I shouldn't leave the listener open to the interpretation that I'm saying something negative. However, says Tosfos, apparently says Tosfos, if I'm saying it in a public setting, so then presumably I mean it to be the positive interpretation. If I just say it to you in the corner of the room, so then you might think I'm trying to whisper some gossip to you. But if I got up in front of a crowded assembly and I said it, so then presumably I meant it in a positive way. Now if I took you aside and I said, oh, that guy, Beryl, you can always count on him. So maybe I mean you can always count on him to mess up. You can always count on him to be obnoxious. But if I got up at the shul dinner and I said, Beryl, you can always count on him. So then presumably I mean that he's always reliable. So that seems to be the way Tosfos understands it. That essentially we're talking about the speaker, and the speaker should worry in general that his statement could be misinterpreted. But because he says it in a public setting, so then that makes it interpreted in the positive way. Now, if that's the case, so then this connects this to another principle in the Gemara, which maybe we won't talk about too much tonight, because it's already getting late, but maybe we'll have a part two with focus on this detail. But it connects it to another part of the Gemara, that the Gemara says, a very similar phrase with one word different, kol milsa dis amras ape mara les be mishum lishnabisha, that anything that you would say in front of the subject is not Lashon Hara. So if I say that Pienka was such and such, and I say I would say it in front of him, so then it's apparently mutter. So the Gemara in Erechim, which has that statement, so the Gemara asks the question, that's not Lashon Hara? That's Lashon Hara and Chutzpah. So it's worse, right? So you're both speaking about the guy, and you don't even care that he can hear you. So that should be worse. So the Gemara basically explains, doesn't spell it out, basically explains that, no, the point of saying that you would say it in front of him, so if you are taka a jerk and you're saying, I'm so nasty, I don't mind being nasty in front of him, so of course it's not mutter. The point is that you're presumably not a jerk. So you're saying that I would say it in front of him, that shows you that what I'm saying I mean positively. And the Gemara quotes somebody as saying, Me'olam lo amarti v'chazarti macharai, something like that, that I never in my life said something and then looked over my shoulder to see if the guy was listening. Point being that whatever I said, I'm not embarrassed to say it in front of him. That I'd be perfectly comfortable, whatever I've said in my life, saying it in front of the people who I'm talking about. And that's taken as an indication that you mean it positively. Again, assuming in the Lav Rishi Askinan, we're not talking about jerks, so therefore you wouldn't say something to hurt somebody else, which clearly would involve Yisurin, many, many Yisurin. So therefore, if you're saying you'd say it in front of the other person, then that's a way of saying it's not offensive. So this pshat in Tosfos explicitly links the two statements, but also thematically links the two. Basically saying these are both indications that what you're saying is not negative. So Tosfos in Erechin actually has a dibur maschil to misamra ape mara. Sounds like it's actually talking about that gemara. But there's a little notation on the side that is talking about the next daf, which Rabbi Tlasa comes up. So a little ambiguity in that Tosfos. Tosfos and Bava Basra does link them. Essentially, it works in the way we're understanding it, that it's all the same idea, that Apimara and Apitlasa are based on the same principle, that they're both indications that what you're saying is not damaging, and therefore, in that context, an ambiguous statement would be assumed to be positive, and it's okay. Something I want to discuss, why should that be true? Maybe I should be worried that my listeners don't have this principle. That maybe my listeners will interpret it the other way. So maybe I should worry about that. And even if you want to say, well, they have a chiv to be down l'chav shchus, so therefore I can trust that. So we don't usually say that l'halacha. We have a concept of marasayin, we have a din min ha-Torah, of yisim nekiyim, but we generally assume that you're not supposed to rely on people's firmkeit as far as their being down l'chav shchus. So there's a little bit of a discussion of why there should be such a heter, how are we able to rely on this, but that's a question in of itself. Rabbeinu Yonah is the fourth pshat. So Rabbeinu Yonah essentially says a similar pshat to this Tosus, but he flips it a little bit. That in Rabbeinu Yonah's understanding, in the Elias Rabbeinu Yonah over here in Baba Basra, so he also understands that it's talking about the speaker, that the speaker is allowed to say what he's saying because he's saying it in front of three, but he's not assuming the person is saying something ambiguous. In Rabbeinu Yonah's understanding, he's saying something mamish negative. So why does it become mutter in front of three? Again, that goes back to the Chafetz Chaim. Why should it be mutter for saying in front of a lot of people? Because Rabbeinu Yonah discusses the fact, essentially, he doesn't say it exactly like this, but essentially what he's saying is that sometimes you're allowed to say something l'toelas. You're allowed to say something because a person is an avarian or whatever it is and needs to be corrected. So then there could be circumstances where you're going to say it, where you should say it. But I should only say it because I want to change his behavior, because I want to have an effect on him. So if I'm going to say it in private, so then I have no expectation it's going to get back to him. And therefore, I shouldn't be saying it. But if I'm going to say it in front of three people, so then is more of a likelihood it'll get back to him. And then my statement is justified. So it is a little funny, but essentially that's what he's saying. That Idavka wanted to be publicized, and because it'll be publicized, it's better. Because it only has a chance of accomplishing something if it gets out. While if I say it in private, it's just dumb gossip. It's not going to go anywhere. So these four pshatim all present different limitations on what the halacha is. You know, whether you can say something really nasty, even if it's public, maybe not. Maybe the whole heter isn't really talking to listeners at all. Maybe it's talking to speakers. If it's talking to speakers, then you're only going to be allowed to say certain types under certain conditions. So that's essentially the Chafetz Chaim's position. So the Chafetz Chaim basically says that this heter of Apei Tlasa only applies in very limited circumstances. So limited that it's almost not shaykh. It doesn't really come up. So you should really stay far away from this. And essentially that's what he spends all of Klal Beis doing, that first of all saying you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara to anybody, certainly not to a lot of people, and then in the Be'er Mayim Chayim basically explaining why all the Rishonim basically would take you to that direction. That essentially, as much as, yes, I know there's a Gemara Apei Tlasa, but essentially it's not going to impact on your life so much. He also notes, you know, apparently, let's say working off the first pshat, that if the people who heard this are all Yirei Shamayim, are all people who can be assumed they're not going to repeat Lashon Hara. So then, again, there's no heter of Apei Tlasa. Now, whether that's true or not is going to depend on the context. The second shot wouldn't necessarily matter if the Yirei Shamayim, if it's something that's heter gomer to repeat. But the first case is basically premised on averus, premised on the first speaker doing something wrong and the listeners then spreading it. So what the Chafetz Chaim is basically saying is that really the listeners shouldn't spread it. And if each individual listener can be assumed to be from, can be assumed to be Yirei Shamayim, so then the whole concept of Apei Tlasa is not going to be there. So just to mention, you know, one or two cases this may affect. So there was a, both of these cases are discussed in the Sefer L'Chafetz B'Chaim, not to be confused with L'Chafetz Chaim. There's a contemporary Sefer called Shailos and Tshuvos L'Chafetz B'Chaim. It's written by a Rabbi Shlomo Rosner, who is very involved in Lashon Hara, very involved in writing about Lashon Hara. He has another sefer, which is a Perish on the Chafetz Chaim, a very big sefer. He has stuff in the back, stuff in the middle, all over the Chafetz Chaim. And then he has this other sefer, which came out already in four editions, Tshuvos on all Tshuvos about Lashon Hara. So one case he talks about is, for example, what about something that's discussed at a Rebbeim's meeting, let's say? Let's say I have a faculty meeting where Rebbeim talk about students. Now, why are they allowed to talk about students in front of other teachers? So that's a good question. We'll go into it tonight. Presumably, there's some type of toelus involved. The assumption is the teachers consult with each other and they share their perspectives. Maybe they share the students, or even if they don't, they have perspectives on how to deal with things. So let's assume it's mutter for the teachers to talk to each other in this setting. But is there an issue of then ape tlasa? Do we assume that if someone says something in front of 10 other rebbeim, that it's mutter to talk about afterwards? So presumably not. And there are at least two solid reasons why not. One is because, first of all, Chafetz Chaim's condition, Yirei Shamayim, so presumably all the rebbeim are Yirei Shamayim, and they're not going to get involved in spreading it. So the whole premise of ape tlasa is not there. But also the premise of Ape Tlasa is not there because, as we saw, let's say, from Rashi's pshat, that normally Ape Tlasa gives you the impression that the speaker is okay with it being spread. But in a faculty meeting, so the working assumption is for sure that everything is private, that things should not be repeated outside that room. So therefore, no matter how many people are present at the meeting, the working assumption is that the speaker does not want you to repeat it, and therefore there's no heterapic loss that's going to come from that. But another very practical issue that the Chafetz Chaim talks about is the question of newspapers. So what if something is publicized in a newspaper? He doesn't get into the question whether it's mutter to write the newspaper in the first place. Zev Elif, who was the editor of the Commentator last year, so before he became editor, he wrote an article in Beis Yitzchak going through all the issues of Ape Tlasa and how it affects things and that. But L'Chafetz B'Chaim, he doesn't talk about the question of whether it's mutter to write it, but let's say something is in the newspapers. So is it mutter to talk about? So he actually wants to say a chiddush, that he thinks that even Tosfos would allow you to talk about something that's already mefursim l'kol. If it's not stam that three people heard it, where in the Tosfos' scenario, three people hearing it is only good for ambiguous things. But it's not just a question of three people, but it's the mefursim l'kol, it's out there, everybody knows. So he assumes that even Tosfos would agree that there's no isser to talk about something that's already out there per se, but he still puts many conditions on it, because it's still an issue of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, and how you transmit it is going to affect Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, and maybe you're going to add on details when you talk about it, so he has many, many conditions that would greatly limit it, but he works off of this premise that if something is mefursim l'kol, essentially he's not saying that's Ape Tlasa, he's saying it's even more than Ape Tlasa, that Tosfos has a more narrow understanding of Ape Tlasa, but that even Tosfos would agree if something is mamish mefursim l'kol, then that should be mutter to talk about. And you have to figure out exactly how he comes to that conclusion. He doesn't really spell it out so clearly, but essentially, I guess what he's assuming is that there really is no damage at that point that you're going to add by talking about it, and that presumably your discussion of something that's already so out there can also be done in theory without negative midos involved either, and he also has all these conditions as to how the issue should be carried, which also presumably mitigates that concern. So maybe we'll end there. Just as we talked about, it's already late, so I don't want to get the topic of Ape Mara has a lot of other details to it as well. So maybe we'll leave that for a separate time for a part two, either next week or in the future. We'll figure out if it's next week or not. But sometime in the future, we'll talk about Ape Mara. But for tonight, those are some of the basic principles of Ape Tlasa. So just to quickly chazer what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that the Gemara has in two places that there is some kind of exclusion from the laws of Lashon Hara if something is Ape Tlasa. Ape Tlasa means that essentially, practically, that it's public knowledge because three people know and those three people have friends. They're going to tell the whole world. And we saw that the Gemara in Erechin has it in the general Lashon Hara context, and the Gemara in Baba Basra has it in a context which may or may not be about Lashon Hara, where a Ma'arer wants the Machzik to know that he is being Ma'arer, and he's doing it from a distance, so he needs it to get to him. So the Gemara says that Ape Tlasa is public knowledge, and it's not clear from the Gemara whether it's saying, therefore, the Lashon Hara issue that's involved in saying somebody's a Gazlan is addressed, or that maybe Baba Basra is not talking about Lashon Hara, it's just using that to talk about publicity. And that affects the question that there are essentially four Mahalchim and Rishonim how to understand what the exclusion of Ape Tlasa means, and it could be that L'Halacha, the Chafetz Chaim, at least feels we should be Cheshish to all of them, or to aspects of all of them, that two pshatim that it's referring to the listeners, either like the Rashbam, that something that's out there is public knowledge, so the listeners are not prohibited from talking about it more. The Rambam seems to say the same thing, but the Rambam also has a consideration that you can't have intent to spread the idea further. And Achronim Medayik in the Rambam also, that he has another condition, that he's really saying two different types of Lashon Hara. One about being Meganes Chavera, which will connect with the Midos concern, and another about being Mazik, somebody with your words, which will connect to a more practical concern. And these Achronim all assume that the Heter of Apeit Lasa only applies to the second type, to the Hezek one, which is not about bad Midos, but if you're trying to hurt somebody, so then it's not going to be Mutter even Apeit Lasa. And there are practical ramifications coming out of that. The second pshat was also about the listeners, that the listeners are allowed to repeat it based on Rashi and Erchin, because the speaker apparently knows what's going to be public and therefore allows it. And that pshat only works for things that the speaker has rishus to allow it to be spread, whether it's gilui sod issue, like actually the Sefer Hashlama says like that also, or maybe it's a rechilus issue, that it's an issue that he's saying something about somebody else. So if he doesn't want that other guy to hear and you're telling the other guy about it, so then it's an issue of starting a fight. But if he's saying it because he wants the other guy to hear, and it's the kind of thing he would have said to him directly, so then that's essentially what he's saying by saying it in public, and therefore it's not the problem for you to repeat it. The other two pshatim talk about the speaker being allowed to say what he's saying because of Apeit Lasa, and that's of course counterintuitive. You think Lashon Hara is worse if you say it in front of a lot of people, so the reasons why it might be mitigated. So Tosis, presumably Tosis and Babash and Erechin are saying the same thing, that we're talking about something which is ambiguous, which you could interpret negatively or positively. So if you say it in public, so then the assumption is you mean it positively, and therefore it's okay to say it in the first place. And Rabbeinu Yonah says that it's something which is pretty negative, but it's justified by Toelas. He doesn't use that word, but that's essentially what he's getting at. And therefore, if you're saying it to one person, so then it's not going to get back to the person who you're trying to change, and therefore it's simply gossip. But if you say it in a public setting, you'll get back to him, and therefore that's considered to be l'toelas, and that's productive. And I mentioned how the Chafetz Chaim basically takes the chumras of all of this and says that the heter is very, very narrow, if existing at all, and we should really stay away from it. And that if people involved who are in part of the three are Yerei Shamayim, so then there's no license to assume it goes any further. And we talked about the two issues that the Teshuvas Lehechafetz Bachayim talks about. One is, let's say you have a Rebbeim's meeting, can you assume that's the situation of Apeit Lasa? So we mentioned two reasons why not, because first of all, the Rebbeim hopefully are Yerei Shamayim, and second of all, because the working assumption is that it's a secret, so therefore, certainly with Rashi's Pshat, the Apeit Lasa part's not going to help. And also the question of what about newspapers? So the Chafetz Chaim doesn't talk about writing newspapers, but he talks about something that's been public in a newspaper, and he wants to suggest really a chiddush on top of Tosfos, that even Tosfos, that seems to have the more restrictive pshat, that it's only ambiguous things that can be repeated, that maybe even Tosfos would say that if it's meforsim l'kol, if it's really out there, so then there's no further problem in talking about it more. But he goes on to impose many conditions that you should make sure not to be makabalit, not to speak about it to somebody who will be makabalit, not to make it any worse than it is, etc., etc. All of that has to be incorporated into how it's done. Okay, we will stop there. I wish you a wonderful night. And parts two about the Abimara we'll have some time in the future.